For the last, for the next year and a half, you had to wait to see whether they're going to refile.
Yeah, for the next
a year.
And so on January 14th of 2004, that year was up.
Right. So
then they came back and filed charges against Frank for the very first time they ever arrested him, which was almost 2 years prior to them arresting the three of us. And they arrested Frank then for treating Medi-Cal patients. And for what they consider
this is Dr.
fraud,
Dr.
Over
Medi-Cal
that
billing fraud.
This is
billing.
Frank. Wait, this is Frank Miller that you said they arrested him originally with you. The three of you were all in jail on on murder charges. Then the murder charges were dropped, and then he was rearrested.
Anyway,
instead of, but the details are not really as important as kind of hearing the final outcome, which is that recently all these charges have finally been dropped.
Everything has been dropped with prejudice. They can't refile on us ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was after the year was up, okay? And so that's when we had to, we were exonerated. We had
all of our property was ordered returned.
And then they didn't, they were supposed to return our money to us, which I guess they figured that they would never have to ever pay us this money. And, you know, that money was supposed to be put in a private fund somewhere and sitting there. Well, they just went and left with it and used it for whatever they wanted to. And
how much money did they take?
We had, at the time that they arrested us, we had $298,000 in our checking account, our business account.
Did you get the money back?
Yeah.
Yes, we got all that.
Is your pharmacy operational again?
No, we haven't got the pharmacy back up yet. We just got our stuff back just this month.
We got our stuff ordered returned to us on the 3rd of May. On the 7th of May, we finally got...
You actually didn't have a house to live in for a while, right?
To go down and pick
it
up.
No, they sold our house out from under us when we were in Seattle giving a presentation to the APHA's annual convention.
The American Pharmaceutical Association.
Yeah, they sold our house from out from under us.
So I hope you haven't been sleeping out illegally in Santa Cruz. You'd be arrested for that.
No, I heard about that.
Or at least harassed or ticketed.
We'd live in a tent if we had to. See, they offered us, in that 7-week prelim, Robert, they offered us, right just towards the end of the prelim, they came in to my husband and I and Frank, and they said, if you guys want to take this misdemeanor and the little slap on
me and Frank,
take a slap on hand, get out of jail, you know, go get open the pharmacy back up and go do your thing, but you need to take this charge, this misdemeanor, like a parking ticket.
My charge was going to have to be a felony.
Yeah, his would have been...
Time served,
and all this other stuff.
It would all been over.
So they offered you a deal if only you'd plead guilty, but if you plead guilty, of course, you lose the opportunity to sue these assholes, right?
That's what they were trying to prevent.
Are you going to sue them?
They spent over $5 million at that point at the prelim.
How much do you think they've spent by now on these cases altogether?
Probably double that, Robert, or more. Because they were just trying to save face.
Has the local media covered this at all in any way?
They've had, our local media has covered it.
It's been pretty one-sided for the prosecution.
Up until now, but it always was one-sided for the prosecution because, once they knew that they didn't have a case, then every time we went to court, they would kind of like, none of the newspapers knew that we were going to court or anything. It was like, unless somebody tipped them off.
Any help from national organizations concerned with the drug war?
DRCNet on the web. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
What is DRC?
It's
Drug Reform Coalition.
Gotcha.
Dave Borden's the president.
I mean, have magazines like High Times and Cannabis Culture covered your case?
No. We did a doctor.
There's a pharmacy trade magazine that's going to do an article for the
Times.
How about the plight of Medi-Cal patients now? Are you able? You haven't got your pharmacy open. Have any pharmacists taken up the slack now that the charges against you have been dismissed, or is there still a lot of fear up
there? There's so much fear and intimidation because the agents came into Shasta County when
they were trying to say that Dr. Fisher was over-prescribing because he was had patients on higher than the recommended dose. They went around and told the pharmacist that, you know, he was, you know, a lot of his prescriptions were forgeries.
Lied to him.
And which, how would they know they were forgeries unless they asked Dr. Fisher if they were his prescriptions or not? And he knows of only one prescription that was a forgery. Well, a patient
is he still a practicing physician? I understand that are you facing any further hearings like before pharmacy boards and so forth?
We're in a board of pharmacy hearing right now, and we're representing ourselves.
That's what makes this so unfair. Is we got our property back, and I've been saying all along, yeah, I need that computer because that has all the stuff I need to defend myself for the pharmacy board. Well, we went down on the 7th of May and picked up our property and come home and the computer's broke. The pharmacy board hearing started on May 10th.
My birthday, of course. That was no coincidence.
So I only had 3 days with the computer, but then I didn't have that because the computer was broke.
So have the pharmacy board hearings ended, or are they still being continued?
We were there, started on May 10th, and then the prosecution put on their defense all the way up until the 19th, and then we were given from the 19th until June 7th, and we go back on June 7th, and we put up our defense.
I see. So you've got...
They allowed us some time to...
Fix your computer and so forth.
Well, there may not be any fixing to it because possibility it could have been tampered with.
Sabotaged, yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen. We have somebody checking this out right now for us. If the computer was tampered with...
Are you getting much community support? We're talking, by the way, we're talking to Madeline Miller and Steve Miller of Redding, California, the Shasta Pharmacy up there, who have been struggling for the last 6 years, 5 months in jail, originally $5 million bail, seizure of all their property, and now they're struggling to get their pharmacy back. And I guess Dr. Fisher, Frank Fisher, is it?
Yes.
Is he still practicing? What's the situation with him?
Well, no, not yet, because what happened was when they arrested Dr. Fisher almost 2 years prior to
arrest. They didn't arrest him. They served a search warrant to get his records, and then like 6 months later they filed these billing fraud charges.
And they arrested and booked and released him.
Yeah.
And so he hadn't spent any jail time or anything like that, but they had at that time 400 because he was treating Medi-Cal, people that were on Medi-Cal, the poor, the red flags go up because, you know.
But does he still have his license?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is he still treating people on Medi-Cal?
Pardon me?
Is he still treating people on Medi-Cal?
That's the whole thing, is when they get these doctors, and see, they've gone after a lot of doctors.
But is he? Is he still doing so?
Yeah, you don't hear about it because they go in and they scare the bejesus out of them.
Right, but is he?
Telling them they're going to throw them in jail.
Right, I understand. But he is still treating people on Medi-Cal.
No,
he stopped.
Not yet.
He hasn't had his medical board hearing.
Yeah, he has to go through that, but there's...
So he doesn't have his credential right now, or?
He does, but he can't practice until after this medical board hearing, just like Stephen hasn't lost his license or anything, but until this board of pharmacy hearing is over with, he can't practice.
Well, what's the impact been on Medi-Cal patients in Redding? Have you had any reports from that community as to what's going on?
I mean, they have, all of our patients have gone down the hill. Some of them have died.
The only ones that were able to get adequate pain control are going to doctors that are like in
Fresno, Oregon. I mean, they have to travel. It's hard enough for somebody. Nobody wants to be on a limited income. Nobody knows can you imagine what it's like when you're looking at somebody across your counter and they're telling you, you know, they got a prescription that's going to cost $50 and that's all the money they have for the week to feed their family. And it's like, I can't pay for this if I do this. I can't pay for my food. I mean, anybody with half a heart we couldn't do it. That's why it was devastating to us to see our patients suffering, not only physically, but emotionally, mentally,
financially,
you name it, and there was nobody helping them.
In Santa Cruz, we have a problem with medical marijuana where there are no dispensaries available here because the city, in essence, has zoned them out. The city claims to be very sympathetic to medical marijuana. They actually jointly gave away medical marijuana with an organization called WHAM in 2002. They were present when that happened in the fall. But their law, passed in 2000, makes it it criminalizes dispensaries.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that per se. It says you can operate in these zones if you meet all this whole elaborate series of requirements, which are very difficult to meet, which distribution center has been willing to try to meet.
You need to find a pharmacy that's willing to do it.
Well, perhaps you should come to Santa Cruz and open a pharmacy and distribute medical marijuana.
That, Robert. You know, I mean, this fight to us, that's what we talk, you know, I mean, everybody asks us, how come, you know, any normal person in the right mind, when they offered you guys, you know, these little charges to go back, why did you say no? What we told them was, tell them to shove it up their, excuse my language, I know we're on the air, but we told them to shove it up their ass. We weren't taking a parking ticket from them, and let's get back in that courtroom and battle it out, because they were wrong and we were right.
Do you have an attorney who is willing to conduct the civil proceedings and get some kind of restitution from these agencies for all the criminal the pain and suffering you suffered?
Well, we thought we did, but that kind of, we don't know really what's going on yet, but we hope to find an attorney that has the guts to take this on, because, I mean, anybody that right now that challenges the government in any way like this is taking a very big risk, because they come at you from all different angles, from the civil side, from the civil to that. I mean, you have no idea what they have done.
IRS.
Yeah, 5 years that we've been fighting with them. But every time they came at us with something, we turned around and came right back at them just as hard, because, you know, I mean, don't ever feel that 1, 2, 3, 4 people can't make a difference, because you can.
So tell me about OxyContin?
OxyContin, that's one of the most safest medications for chronic intractable pain patients to take. And Stephen can tell you about that.
The hype on it from the drug salesmen and what pharmacists were being told and doctors was that because it has this dual extended release mechanism, it's the hardest narcotic to abuse until they got all the news release about it anymore, without them telling you how to abuse it, crush it up and snort it, or
Attorney Generals are the ones that
created the demand for it.
And they told everybody, that's like how they took, you see people show you how to break into a car with, you know, or you see these commercials how, you know, this is how you break into a car, and then everybody gets their car broken into. Well, this is what they did with the OxyContin, is this is how you abuse it. You know, you cut this pill up that's supposed to be a last up to 12 hours in your system, and you crush it and snort it.
Get all the dose all at once.
Yeah,
so how long, Steve, have you been prescribing OxyContin?
It was a new drug, and I think it just came out in 96. And
it came out specifically for chronic pain patients.
By about 2001, I think it was about number 15 on the list of all drugs as far as the
so other pharmacists are still
dollar sales.
Oh,
other
yes.
Pharmacists are still prescribing it?
Absolutely, and in large doses to legitimate chronic pain patients. There's nothing wrong with it, and it doesn't make people that have chronic pain, Robert, see, this is a misconception, the propaganda they have fed people. People with chronic pain do not get all drugged and goofy or anything when they're taking their medication. It takes the pain away from their body
so they can function normal
and have a quality of life that everybody deserves.
Is there a source you'd recommend for people listening? And you're listening to Free Radio, by the way, in case you've forgotten. It's 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. My guests are the Millers, Madeline and Steve Miller, up in Redding, California. Pharmacists and, I guess, activists and pharmacists, both. They're both activists. And
I'm just the wife that managed the pharmacy. I don't have
sound like a little more than that there, Madeline, but
she's definitely an advocate.
Yeah, very.
Say the least. You've been fighting. You know the. We're talking about the state. What specific state agency has been most responsible for this prosecution?
The Attorney General's office out of Sacramento. The Bureau
of Medi-Cal Fraud.
The Northern Medi-Cal. They're the ones that approve or disapproves all the, you know, they take over all the Medi-Cal,
Is there a website you can go to that if you want to get more information on this case, people can?
Yes, you can go to www.drfisher.org.
www.drfisher.org?
www.drfisher.org.
Okay. And
tells about our whole case.
I don't know if he's had time to update it, but going back to the first time that they seized his records and arrested him and released him, and he was back at work the next day. But they, after they dropped the charges on the conspiracy, they resurrected that case, and he just finished trial on that. And what it amounted to was $150 worth of Medi-Cal fraud if he was found guilty on all counts.
And this
was
over
serious stuff.
Yeah, this was over billing procedure.
And it cost the state, our attorneys told us, $1,000 a day for a trial.
Well, that's sensible, isn't it?
Real sensible. When
so, are you? Do you think, doctor? You guys intend to reopen your pharmacy?
Oh, absolutely. As soon as we get this DOP hearing done, we plan on. That's our next thing that we're going to do is reopen our pharmacies. There's a lot of people out there that, since we've been gone, our patients have been having to pay cash for the medication. They go to a pharmacy. If a pharmacy even tells them that they'll do a TAR for them, they tell them that it's going to take 2, 3, 4 weeks to make them pay for it, and all the stuff. When, by law, when a pharmacy turns a TAR into the Medi-Cal division, that's the treatment authorization request, by law they have to have it turned around and back to the pharmacy within 24 hours. So
if they fax it.
So we can expect that you're going to be back on the job once you get your pharmacy back, once you get things settled, once you get your license straightened out. I want to thank you both for being on the air here on Free Radio and giving us the first exclusive on this. This rather obscene miscarriage of justice that you've been forced to go through for 5 years.
Over 5 years.
Yeah,
but you know, Robert, I mean, nothing is more important than this. It's because, for one thing, to us, you know, I mean, people could walk into our pharmacy. They were treated just like everybody was equal. I mean, and not talked down to or degraded, because nobody wants to be in that position. And, this is the whole thing, but nobody would help them either. Just like these fair hearings, we got this one through the court and won, hands down. We had 100 fair hearings filed for the patients. We got one through the court, set that precedent, and it was right after the judgment came out. I think we went to court.
And hopefully you're going to be setting many more precedents. I want to thank you. I'm going to have to roll on this one.
We'll be up next month.
Wow.
Hey, keep me advised when you get to town. I expect we're going to have a little pizza together, if not something better.
We've educated your public a little more.
I think you have.
We look forward to coming to Santa Cruz and seeing you in person again soon.
Hey.
Next month.
Yeah, the whole thing is that the patients have to stand up and start speaking out for themselves and take their civil rights back and their right to having. Nobody should tell us what we should do with our bodies and how it should be treated, and I don't think any government should tell us what, you know, take our body fluids for any reason. I mean, if I was an insulin patient or something like that, they wouldn't be doing that to me then. I mean,
it's that's what we're doing, and that's what you're doing, and I salute you for it.
Thanks
a lot. We've been talking with Steve and Madeline Miller of... is that right?
Yes.
And, of course, we don't have Dr. Fisher on the line, but...
He'll be up next month with us.
Maybe we can grab him when he comes to town. In the meantime, good luck in reestablishing the pharmacy, and much thanks for the 5 years of struggle.
Thank you, Robert, because you and Becky were one of the first journalists and reporters we had ever spoke to, and you guys had the courage to put our story out there the first time, when nobody even knew this kind of stuff was even going on. And our story was so outrageous, it was almost unbelievable that...
Cover it in an hour,
That's for sure. Listen, thank you very much. All righty.
Thank you.
We'll talk when you get down there. Bye-bye. And that was a couple of brave people up in Redding, California. You too can be brave and go on the air and talk about this issue or issues that you think are important here locally. That's what we want to do, is blow a few whistles. We'd like to see Medi-Cal provide for people who have intractable pain problems here, as well as people who have medical marijuana concerns and needs. Stay with us. We'll talk more about it. You can call in if you want, 427-3772. First, a bit of a musical break. Thank you.
Nobody seemed to want him. The hired man sang like a song. Sometimes he would beat him, 'cause he would never do the chore. He was lost in dreaming. He never seemed to find a place with the flatlands and the farmers. So he had to leave one day, he said, to be an actor. Once he come back to the farm with starlets from the stages, they locked themselves inside his room. The people turned their faces. A neighbor ran from the movie house. Chickens, they were scattered. He swore he saw upon the screen Jim Dean of Indiana. He played a boy without a home, torn with no tomorrow, reaching out to touch someone, a stranger in the shadow. The Winslows left the movie town. They drove across the country. They hoped that he would stay around, and they hoped he would be friendly. He talked to them for half an hour. He was busy racing.
And that was another Phil Oakes number, or part of one. It's entitled Jim Dean of Indiana. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and phone lines are open, 427-3772. A couple of announcements. The Santa Cruz Bill of Rights Dawdling Committee meets Wednesday, 9th of June. That's next Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Resource Center for Nonviolence at 515 Broadway. Those of you who are interested in the Santa Cruz Bill of Rights, actually they call themselves the Defense Committee. They are concerned with the Patriot Act and some kind of local response, actually a national response, but specifically they were formed to encourage the city council to tighten up its instructions to employees that say don't cooperate with unconstitutional federal activity, such as, looks like we had some unconstitutional state activity being discussed by the Millers in this last long interview from Redding, California. Well, here in Santa Cruz, I know we can't really imagine unconstitutional activity happening here, but I guess it's one of them possibilities. City Council a week ago, Tuesday, passed to me, relatively meaningless resolution, which had nothing to do with what the Bill of Rights Defense Committee was formed for, and I'm still tussling with some members of the Bill of Rights Committee on whether where that actually leaves us, and perhaps we'll get someone to call in on that subject, who knows. Tonight at 7 o'clock in the City Council chambers, there is a Planning Commission City Council hearing on I guess it's West Side Development. It sounds pretty technical. I did speak to activist Francis from De Anza, who has been very active in fighting the gutting of rent control there, or was active in fighting in September, and for a while was working with Huff. She's off to that meeting. If you want to see what the City Council is up to, you can wander over to the City Council chambers. Apparently, you'll see another one of their
performances. I was actually at a city council meeting last night. There was a special Wednesday night meeting at the Civic Auditorium around the issue of the widening of Highway 1, and I wasn't there for most of it because SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, has its event on that same evening, and I was there, and then afterwards I spent some time talking to Bill Rice Fence Committee Chair Lisa. Thanks, Lisa, for filling me in. She gave me some of the details of her meeting with manager Dick Wilson. Dick has told the Bill of Rights Defense Committee that he just cannot allow his employees to be menaced by an ordinance proposal that they proposed that would require employees to follow the Constitution. So that would put them in a very difficult position, because if the federal government tells them not to follow the Constitution, then they'd be caught between a rock and a hard place. They have to either do what the feds say and get hassled by, or get hassled by the feds. And if they don't do what the feds say, they get if they refuse to do what the feds say, they'll be following the city law if that becomes law. But if they don't, then they might get prosecuted by the feds. So it really puts the city employees in a difficult position. What city manager Dick Wilson didn't tell anybody, or didn't tell us yet, is what about the position the rest of us are put in? His employees may be put in a difficult position, but the position is always follow the Constitution. And if the Constitution is being violated systematically by Washington, it's time we damn well said no thanks. Dick Wilson doesn't understand this. Perhaps he should hand over his $160,000 job to someone else. And if he doesn't want to do that, perhaps we can get a city council that will actually change the city manager, as we'd hoped would happen in 1998, but didn't. So that, anyway, I didn't get to the city council meeting until late last night, and I wandered in there with cop watcher Tom, who's probably listening to this program right now downtown in front of Borders. If anybody there wants to call in and talk, maybe they can give a hoot and a holler. I know last week the police were engaged in such vigilant militant activities as arresting minors for dropping, and I'm quite literal about this, a toothpick on the sidewalk. They arrested a man named Lee for, first they seized him for dropping a toothpick, littering, and they found some cigarettes on him, and they took him to the police station for that and held him there until his mom showed up. Anyway, I'm going to finish this story, even if it takes me all night. I went to the city council meeting last night, and it was kind of a sparse crowd. For those interested in the Highway 1 issue, I hope to have Paul Wagner on the air. In spite of his Scott Kennedy for City Council button, which he was wearing so prominently, Paul is a very articulate and well-spoken guy who gives Scott Kennedy entirely too much credit for too many things, but he certainly is a voice worth hearing and worth talking to. I wanted to get his opinion, so I kind of followed him to the back of the room, where there was a curtain sort of separating the main room from the back of the, it was actually the front of the Civic Auditorium, which was curtained off, where I guess the TV crew was operating. And Paul went to get some pizza and some coffee, and I kind of followed him there. The next thing I knew, Vice Mayor Rotkin was at my elbow saying, "You can't go back there." And he said, "The public is not allowed back there." And I said, "Well, remember, the public just walked back there." And he said, "Oh," and he kind of paused for a second. Then he came back, "Well, you can't be back here." And I said, "Well, I'll be happy to leave when Paul leaves. I'm just waiting to talk to him." There were about a total of 40 people in the entire Civic Auditorium, maybe 50 at this point. Very few people left. Well, maybe 60. There was there had been several hundred maybe or so earlier, but at least by 10:30 or 11, it had really kind of toned down. And so Rotkin went over and said to Paul, you know, he said something to him, and Paul came over and started walking toward me, and he was taking his time eating this piece of pizza and drinking his coffee, and he got to me and he kind of stopped and started talking to me, and I talked to him. Rotkin then came back for a third time and said to us, "Let me be more forceful. You two must leave now." And a police officer showed up, and too bad I didn't have my tape recorder on. I would have loved to have gotten this for free radio. It would have been a beautiful bit. Because I don't think anybody but Rotkin, and I don't know for sure why he was taking time away, leaving his seat at the city council deliberations to go and deal with me. He apparently didn't care about Paul being back there. He didn't go to him and say, "You have to leave." He just went to me and said I had to leave. This kind of selective focus on individuals that apparently he has he recognized me. I think he probably recognized Paul too. And It was more kind of amusing in a way. But as I walked. Actual result of that is, perhaps someone could call in and give me the update, although the discussion was in the Sentinel this morning. But at the very end of this so-called democratic process, the vice mayor of the city abandoned his post to go after an activist who was in the backstage area simply trying to get the attention of another person. They were going to go out and talk privately about something. And then essentially was going to, he would have called a halt to proceedings. I mean, I could have made an issue of it and said, you know, this area is, you may say it's not open to the public, but the public is back here. So if you want to make an issue of it, why don't you stop the meeting, recess the chambers, and we can make a huge police issue of it, and we can see just how fascistic you want to be. And to me, it recalled why I christened Mike Rodkin Riot Act Rodkin, as I called him in 1996, when he attempted to have the entire city council, city hall grounds, outside the city council, the entire green area, where there had been a homeless protest going on for 2 months because he refused to put the sleeping ban on the agenda, the law that criminalizes sleeping outside after 11 o'clock at night in a city where there's sleeping facilities for less than 40 people and 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people every night facing citations, harassment, and unsafe conditions. His response, of course, was to close down protests. So I called him Riot Act Rodkin, because his preference is to use police power, which to me is fascistic. It's really fascistic to do that. He also, of course, was the man who turned to Scott Kennedy on January 13th of this year, when we were silently walking past the city council podium with signs because Mayor Kennedy refused to put the sleeping ban on the agenda or to allow even an oral communications time at a time anyone could use. And when Michael Parenti turned and said very quietly, well, audibly, it wasn't very quietly, but he didn't scream or anything of that sort, Kennedy had said to him, you're disrupting the proceedings, he said to all of us, by walking with signs. Michael Parenti said to Kennedy, no, we're not. We're really not. That's not true, and continued walking. Rodkin said just to Kennedy audibly on the city council tape, and you can hear him say this, Scott, you don't have to take that kind of crap. And order them out of here. And Kennedy, in essence, did something to that effect, and then later had me arrested because I whispered to a homeless man. And when I asked him why he was telling me to be quiet, I mean, he warned me I'd done something previously. What was it? He ordered me from the chambers, I refused to leave, and I was arrested. But Rodkin was the instigation behind this. And it's clear that the man he prefers those kinds of methods. He likes to pose, he's ironically on the board of the American Civil Liberties Union. He supports supposedly ending the Patriot Act nationally, but when it comes to taking local city action, he rejected the entire Bill of Rights Defense Committee's proposals that the city employees, like Arcata's employees, or even not as strongly as the city of Arcata, but like Palo Alto, that there be instructions given that the city employees would either, they'd go back, like San Francisco, to ask about if a warrant were issued, it would have to first go to the city council before it could be enforced by local police or by local agents of the library or whatever, that there would have to be a review process. All of this has been essentially rejected or ignored or sidelined by Rodkin, the city manager, and the city attorney, as well as, of course, by Mayor Kennedy. And it's important that people understand that that is where the kind of situation we're living under in Santa Cruz. It's not Washington, D.C. It's not the Republicans. It's not even the evil Democrats. It's our city council and our police chief and our city manager and city attorney. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hey, Robert. Sorry to interrupt your rant.
Oh, please.
I wanted to call attention to something that would kind of be a precursor to the big biotech demos that are going down starting to tomorrow night in San Francisco, and relate to the police state, and if you have any time.
Sure, go for it.
Okay, it's about this guy, Steve Kurtz, an associate professor in the Department of Art at the State University of New York's University at Buffalo, member of Critical Art Ensemble. And I could read it to you if you like. It's pretty short.
If you'd like, or you can summarize it, whichever you want to do.
Basically, Kurt's wife, Hope Kurtz, died in her sleep of cardiac arrest in early morning hours of May 11th. Police arrived, became suspicious of Kurtz's art supplies, and called the FBI. Within hours, FBI agents had detained Kurtz as a suspected bioterrorist.
Wait a minute, his art supplies?
His art supplies. He does art against genetic engineering of food.
What, they didn't like his art supplies? They didn't like the content of his art? Which?
They did not like the content of the art. Here, and I'll tell you what it is exactly. Okay, a member of Critical Art Ensemble, Free Range Grains, Critical Art Ensemble's latest project includes a mobile DNA extraction laboratory for testing food products for possible transgenic contamination. It was this equipment which triggered the Kafka's chain of events. Okay.
Now, was this done pursuant to some search warrant or some secret court bullshit?
What happened was he called because his wife had died in her sleep. And when they came, they noticed the art equipment, and they took it all, and they took the body of his wife for evidence.
Claimed he was engaged. I see. He was part of a bioterrorist plan, which his wife fell victim to. Or?
No, she just died of cardiac arrest.
That, but the claim was that she was somehow being affected by the.
No, she wasn't involved at all. They didn't involve her at all.
Did they take her body?
They just considered it evidence, you know. I'm just reading from
evidence
the report
of what?
I have. I don't know, some type of bioterrorism.
Weird.
It says, today there's no legal way to stop huge corporations from putting genetically altered material in our food, said Defense Fund spokeswoman. Yet owning the equipment required to test for the presence of Frankenfood will get you accused of terrorism. You can be illegally detained by shadowy government agents, lose access to your homework and belongings, which is what happened to him, and find that your recently deceased spouse's body has been taken away for analysis.
So, analysis. They must think there's some sort of bioterror deal involved in the body.
Possibly. And apparently he's out now, but he hasn't, and he recovered his wife's body, but he has not been returned any of his equipment, computers, or manuscripts, nor given any indication of when they will. The case remains open, and I have a website if anyone's interested in knowing about it.
What's the website?
Okay, it's www.rtmark.com/CAE Defense. Yes, the Critical Art Ensemble. That's what he is. He's a professor.
So it's www.rtmark.com/CAE Defense.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Well, that's some interesting, and of course, we're talking to Chris. You're a poet, I know, and you worked with the Bill of Rights Defense Committee.
Yeah, I'm in exile.
Are you planning to be up at this San Francisco anti-war protest coming up?
I'm going to be in the anti-war protest. I'm going to be there till tomorrow until Tuesday, so I'm going to be doing all of it.
You want to give me an update on what's coming up? I haven't seen much on it.
Tomorrow night there's going to be a big party in the streets, a big dance down the Empire. I don't know exact details of that, but it's going to be Friday night.
Is there a website people can go to?
Website is www.rtreclaimthecommons.net.
Okay.
If you go to Reclaim the Commons, you'll find it all.
I think there's also
calendar.
I think there's information on the Indie Media website.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot. Yeah, Bradley's on top of that.
Media.
Yeah, quite a lot of people going from Santa Cruz, and it is on all the Indie Media, so they'll find it all out there. There's going to be stuff till the night, and I'll be there for a few days to do it all as well.
I know you also sent me an interesting article, Chris, which I kind of followed up on, but haven't gotten too far with, by Ryan Kim of the Chronicle about the situation of Laurie Haig's art gallery, the Capo Bianco Gallery up in San Francisco, and the case of Guy Caldwell's paintings of torture, which were, of course, I guess, depicted the abuse of Iraqi prisoners by American soldiers. And according to this, I guess she, in on May 16th, Caldwell, an East Bay artist, made this addition to his month-long showing at the Haig's Gallery on Powell Street with this big picture, showed Iraqi prisoners being abused, a black-and-white painting depicting three hooded and naked men undergoing electric shock torture by American soldiers. 2 days after the painting went up, Haig arrived at her gallery to find broken glass, eggs, and trash strewn outside her storefront. Haig also began receiving the first of about 200 angry voicemails, emails, and death threats. A week ago, a man walked into the gallery and spat in her face. On Tuesday, Haig decided to temporarily close the gallery and began to consider giving up on her dream of owning an art gallery. Just 2 days later, another man knocked on the door of the gallery and then punched Haig in the face, knocking her out, breaking her nose, and causing a concussion. Have you heard any more about how Haig is doing? And I know I've left her an email asking if we can get a copy of her of this picture so we can actually display it at the Huff table and see if, you know, anybody wants to come up and, you know, we can maybe have punch the painting and for $5 and we can, you know, give that money to vets coming back from Iraq who aren't being treated too well.
Yes, well, I will be in North Beach, so anything I find out, I'm probably going to be seeing Sarah Menifee at the demo on Saturday, so I'll talk to her about it, and if I can bring anything back or any updates, I'll definitely bring them to you next Wednesday.
Sounds
so
good.
Haven't heard anything else since then.
I know you show up at the SAFE events every Wednesday at 6 to 9.
Yeah, I love the SAFE event. Very fun.
People strum in front of the New Leaf Market.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, thank you, Christopher.
Cool. All right, see everybody in the streets.
All righty.
All right, take it easy. Bye.
Bye.
Phone lines are open. We only have about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, maybe even 10 minutes left here at Free Radio. You can give a call, 427-3772. I will take your call if you call in. I actually got an email from Harmony Kidding, who I think is involved with the gallery, and maybe not, maybe it's not too clear. I sent out an email on the Huff line and also to the gallery asking about how people felt about putting up this controversial painting at the Huff table. I mean, you know, you say Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, what has that got to do with the war in Iraq and the torture of Iraqis by American soldiers? To me, of course, that this war, all war, creates homeless people, but particularly this kind of war, which is, of course, making thousands and tens of thousands of Iraqis homeless, already has, and, of course, is killing hundreds of American soldiers and disabling many, many more, and, of course, diverting funds from what should be decent social activity here in the United States to obscene, absurd, and counterproductive scams and schemes abroad. That's what that's all about. This person, Harmony, replies, "If you feel moved to display the copy of the painting at the Huff table, then go for it. We are supporting the freedom of speech and expression. This targeting of various segments of the population is wrong. Homeless people have the right to express themselves in free speech. And in all those activities which you and Becky and others have put yourselves in the line for, artists too have the right to paint what the spirit moves them to paint. Caldwell is addressing the brutality and evil of torture and abuse, which is, of course, uncomfortable to those hypocritical members of society who would rather go on living in denial about what our administration, or mad administration, and some, perhaps many of our soldiers have done. The prisoners have been subjected to inhumane treatment. Inhumane treatment not unlike what the homeless population of Santa Cruz faces every day. Oh, yeah, I know, there are no electric shocks to the Santa Cruz street people, but probably only because the powers that be begrudge spending the electricity. But harassing and churning street people, denying them freedom of speech, making laws that deny their being able to cover themselves with a blanket, that's called the blanket ban, that's the section right after the sleeping ban in the municipal code in Santa Cruz, interfering with sleep, they're treating Santa Cruz homeless as prisoners in an outside prison made of invisible walls, and dictating what artists can and cannot paint and enforcing that message via physical violence and threatening acts is to confirm a police state. My mother is an artist, too. I wouldn't want anyone censoring her either or threatening a gallery owner over displaying her paintings. Just my opinion. Admire you and Becky. Remember how well and how grim and incredibly stressful it was just to try and survive in Santa Cruz while homeless." And it's also true. Someone was mentioning this, these kind of, I guess Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Had some interviews yesterday with the fact that some experts pointing out that the most severe and harsh prison administrators from the U.S. were sent over to Iraq, and some people actually died under their administration here in the U.S. for such things as being held in a restraining chair. And some of you may wonder what a restraining chair is. I can tell you that I heard about a restraining chair because it's used in the Santa Cruz County Jail. It's a chair they shackle you into. And also, I believe I was told that hoods are used, or were used several years ago. And I'd like to know if that's still going on. If anybody has any reports on this, I'd like to hear about it. Maybe that the process was discontinued, or maybe I heard a fabulous story, meaning a fictional story. But The chair story was told in some detail to me by a person who had been, he said, held in that chair, in a restraining chair, for hour after hour after hour. So, give a call. If you can't call on air at 427-3772, and you may not have much more time, you don't, to do that, you can call me off air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Also call if you're interested in the Huff and Puff Project. If you're a person who'd like to receive medical marijuana and you need some help around that, we have a call on air, however. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hi.
You know, I don't know too much about that chair, but I've been hearing more and more about it. I think it's something that has special lumps and ridges where it, at specific pressure points. It's not just like an electric chair or some kind of chair. It's like a chair that was specifically designed to be super uncomfortable, and actually, I think when you're strapped into it, it can break bones and stuff. And so when you're pulled into it real hardcore, it's not just like a normal chair. It's one that's...
We're talking about a chair at the Santa Cruz County Jail.
That's what you said.
Yeah.
I'm talking about... Now, I'm not sure that they have one there, so...
Right.
That's what you said. I'm saying that's the type of restraining chair that's been coming out lately that I've heard about.
Right.
Last couple of years. And it's like, it's not just a chair. It's like a torture chair. And when they strap you into it, like the guy on Amy Goodman's show yesterday, when he was strapped to it for like 16 hours, it killed him.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's heavy-duty stuff.
Well,
it causes blood clots. It's not just like an uncomfortable chair.
Yeah, but, caller, this is a correctional chair. You know, as what's his name, Trent Lott?
Well, I'm sure a chiropractor wouldn't call it that.
Well, yes, but these people are soft on crime.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay, I hear your tack. But seriously, anyway,
yes.
That's what the chair is. It's like a really bad thing. People should look it up because it's a serious torture device. 16 hours is a long time.
Yeah, and the short times seem real long times, even the short times.
Yeah, but not to the torturers.
No, well, you know, these are improved techniques.
Whatever. Okay, carry on. I just wanted to fill in that little guy.
No, I appreciate that.
Right, just late.
Thank you. Have you been given the chair lately? Let me know. 427-3772. We have another caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. Hi, this is Ray. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, don't get, like, you know, fixated on the chair, because, you know, it doesn't matter about the particular chair, though I don't doubt that they have chairs that are specifically designed for different types of torture and devices. But it really depends on how one is tied to the chair, how one is tied to the chair in different facts, you know, different ways that they shackle you. And by the way they shackle you, they either open or they close up your rib cage, and then, of course, there's other devices where they do bag your head and stuff like that. And
Are you talking about Santa Cruz or about...
You know, I don't know about Santa Cruz,
okay.
But I could tell you San Jose for sure. You know, I could tell you Elmwood for
okay.
sure. I could tell you San Francisco for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if you run amok with them and they come in with their rush team, you know, and they get you when you're asleep and they throw you on the ground and they drag you off to someplace, yeah, you're going to find yourself shackled to some kind of chair, some kind of really odd position, and you're either going to learn some sort of deep meditative breathing process, or, you know, you're going to go insane or die. You know, and another thing I wanted to say, since I got you on the line, is how about that guy down on Highway 1 that got in that confrontation with a cop and got shot? First it was 2 times in the paper, but then we find out the next day that the cop shot him 3 times?
I remember. Yeah, actually, I've read the reports in the Sentinel. I've heard there's another report in the Chronicle. There was supposedly a guy with a video camera running around, but I haven't heard anything more from that. And also,
right.
And there was another report that the first report said that he had no criminal record, and then the next story, it looks like they're obviously scrounging for something, that he had 2 vehicle violations.
You know, hey, you know, this is that classic example of that Hollywood movie that came out years ago. This is a man who would not take it anymore. This was a man who got tired of these people probably throwing citations at him every time he parked his car. He probably got tired of paying taxes and got tired of some cop that wanted to tell him what to do. And, you know, here's a citizen who took the law in his own hands. And what happens when you take the law in your own hands against the state? They gun you down, brother.
Well, it certainly looks like, and there was a lot of solicitude for the officer. You didn't hear too much about the victim, the victim being the individual who was shot by the officer.
The victim was the guy who got pulled over to be, you know, harassed by the officer. He's the victim. He's just driving on his way, trying to probably go to work, come home from work, go meet some friends for a party or whatever, just doing his thing, Memorial Day weekend, whatever day it was. But, you know, this officer is the guy who steps into his life, and, you know, he's the guy who wants to, like, force this guy into servitude to the state. You know, hey, I got a gun, I got a badge, you sign this ticket, and you pay money to me or else. And this guy said, you know what, fuck you. And he probably popped the guy, took his stick from what they say, maybe hit him with it, and, you know, I can't blame the guy. You know, these cops in our state are running amok. We got a governor running amok. And I don't know, Robert, the end of the show is a good show. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
It is the end of the show. I'm going to prepare the road for Uncle Dennis, who usually shows up about this time. I do thank you for tuning in to this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to try to get some stuff on Iraq and more. Got some num-nums. I got a great speech by George Galloway from The Guardian I wish I had had time to read. Maybe I'll read it on Sunday. Lots of weird shit going down around Iraq. A lot of it is covered very, very concisely, I think very well, on Amy Goodman. I'm also trying to read right-wing sources so we can also get the other side of the story, and I'll bring that one to you as well. You want to catch me off air, look for the vehicle with all those weird bumper stickers, give a call to 423-HUFF. Come on down to the Huff table in front of Borders. I'll be there for a little while this evening. And call into the next edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning. Hey, see you then.
And he's walking down the highway with his big boots on and his big thumb out. He wants to get me, he wants to hurt me, he wants to bring me down. Ah, but sometime later, when I feel a little straighter, I will come across a stranger who'll remind me of the danger. And then I'll run him over. Pretty smart on my in the dark. I can see her coming and she sure looks pretty, and her breasts are bold and her mouth is large. She wants to get me, she wants to hurt me, she wants to bring me down. Ah, but sometime later, when I feel a little naked, I will lead her to the altar, then I'll tie her all in leather, and then gonna whip her. Pretty smart on my part to find my way in the dark. I can see him a-coming, he's a-walking through the bedroom with the switchblade knife, and he's looking at my wife. He wants to get me, he wants to hurt me, he wants to bring me down. Ah, but sometime later, when I feel a little braver, I'll go hunting with my rifle where the wild geese are flying, and then I'm gonna bag one. Pretty smart on my part, find my way in the dark. I can see them a-coming, they're a-training in the mountains, and they talk Chinese, and they spread disease. They want to get me, they want to hurt me, they want to bring me down. Ah, but sometime later, when I feel a little safer, we'll assassinate the president and take over the government, and then we're gonna fry them. Pretty smart on my part, find my way in the dark.
not tell us in fact. Do I know you? Have I been here before? This is a dream, right? Deja vu. Did I come here on my own? Oh, I see. Welcome to the room, Sarah, for starlight. Welcome to the choir, sir. Ooh, missionary. Thank you.